Ladies and gentlemen, we are proud to welcome as our special guest today Mr. Robert Nathan, distinguished author of Portrait of Jenny, who will narrate the premiere performance of his latest novel, Sir Henry, on romance. Romance, transcribed stories of love and adventure, of excitement and derring-do. Beginning this week, part one of two broadcasts devoted to the delightful adventures of a workaday knight in the ninth century, with the noted American author, Mr. Robert Nathan, as our narrator, and Mr. Jay Novello as Sir Henry.
Sir Henry rested his horse by Indle Water, where it rounded in clear green pools among the boulders. He rested himself also on the moss along the riverbank. His dog Manfred lay beside him, and his spear, sword, and helmet reclined at his side. Sir Henry was not a young man, and his hound Manfred was not young either. His sword, which had started out as a two-hander, had from much use in honing lost half its heft. His horse was solid and needed grooming. He was not a hero. When it was time to fight, he fought, but often suffered a nosebleed afterwards. In short, one would have said that here was a solid, down-to-earth, workaday knight engaged in making his living.
Oh, if only there were some good to it, like a decent castle of my own or a rich wife. But I'm sure there's nothing like that for me.
Sir Henry's hound, Manfred, put his head down and lapped a little water from the stream. It was not very filling, but it was something. Manfred was also hungry. A bird spoke from a nearby branch, and the hound looked up.
Manfred! Oh, Manfred!
Oh, what do you want?
There's a dragon up the stream. Be careful.
There are always dragons. Is this the lonesome kind, or is he attached to something?
A damsel. Tell him to be careful.
What's the good of that? He won't listen to me. I have no influence.
A big dog like you?
Dogs do what men tell them to do. Men never do what dogs tell them to do. This is one of the first laws. Be glad you're a bird.
Oh, not when there are cats around. Be glad you're a dog.
Do you think it's fun to be a knight's hound? Do you know what I've had to eat in the last 48 hours? I've had exactly 2 bites of cheese.
Oh, cheer up. You may end up as part of a meal yourself, and then your troubles will be over. But if, and mind you, I say if, your master were to overcome the beast, then you'll have a mistress. And you're already bound to fare better.
We are.
Certainly. Do you think a damsel will be satisfied with a little cheese and some branch water? You'll see some changes made.
You mean steaks and stews and short ribs?
Men. Salads, my friend, salads. With whipped cream and candied cherries and poppy seeds.
The flycatcher was right. There was a dragon. He, or she, there is always that question with dragons, was slouching in front of its cave, smoking slightly at the nostrils, waiting for its dinner, which approached on horseback through the forest glades, humming a tune as it came.
Heavens, what's that?
It had been some time since Sir Henry had fought a dragon, and never one as large as this. So he took advantage of the moment while the dragon was slowly inflating himself to combat dimensions to recall what the best authorities had said about dragon fighting. Drawing his sword, he stood up in his stirrups, slammed his visor shut, and shouted,
"Faint heart, near one fair lady!"
The dragon replied,
"How do you know? Have you seen her?"
There is a fair lady, then?
Of course. Her name's Alice Anne. Might I have the names of your next of kin?
Is that necessary?
'Tis customary.
Oh, I see. Quite. I'm Henry of Brentford, knight. My father was Sir Tiffany of the Glen, and my mother was an enchantress.
Nonsense. Your mother was a kitchen wench for King Uther Pendragon. I know all about her.
She enchanted my father, and the enchantment was strong enough to bring me into the world, and strong enough to protect me from dragons, as long as you ask. So forward, Ponder! St. George for Merry England!
Sir Henry dug his heels into Ponder's flanks, which simply caused that animal to retreat a little further to the rear. The dragon was now nearly twice its original size, and each time it exhaled, twin jets of smoke and flame floated cigar-like out of its nostrils.
Ponder, old boy, forward, not backward.
With this, Sir Henry brought the flat of his sword down on the charger's rump. The animal jumped in surprise, and the sword flew out of Sir Henry's hand, landing on the grass several yards away. Now Ponder stood still, frozen to the spot, and the expanding dragon filled the mouth of the cave, smoky and terrible, and slightly irritated at the way things were going.
Come, come, let's get on with it. I can't hold this pose forever.
Ponder, are you afraid of dragons? Come, sir, up and at him. Giddy up. Not so fast. Slower.
But Ponder, as though hypnotized by the dragon's fiery eye, rushed at full gallop toward what was apparently his own suicide. The dragon opened his mouth to receive horse and rider. Ponder stopped very suddenly. Sir Henry's spear toppled forward and slid down the dragon's throat. Exactly like the pictures of St. George. The dragon popped like a pricked balloon and turned a reproachful eye upon the champion.
You have killed me.
In fair combat.
What was fair about it? Alizanne. Farewell.
Alizanne?
Now that the fight is over, I thought you might want your tea.
The Lady Alizanne had taken time to brush her golden hair and tie on her prettiest kerchief. Now she brought forth scones and marmalade for tea and small patties of some kind of meat. Sir Henry, with a dead dragon lying in front of him, was a little doubtful about the meat and managed to pass the patties on to Manfred without Alizanne noticing.
I'm glad things turned out as they did, for I should dislike to be married to too much of a hero.
Mary?
Why, yes, you are a lucky man.
Me?
Oh, the minute I saw you fall off your horse, I thought to myself, that man is lucky, and that's much better than mere strength of arms.
It is?
And I thought of something else, too. I thought you ought to stay home more, because I shouldn't like to see my husband carried on a stretcher. But there's something I must tell you. I have no dowry.
I should have thought the dragon would have left you something.
Oh, nothing useful, really. He was very kind, actually. He gave me my own room with a mirror and a dressing table. What really hasn't been too dreadful here, just dull, waiting to be someone's wife.
Well, to tell you the truth, I am scarcely in a position to support a wife.
Oh, that is a pity. But at least permit me to think of myself as some kind of relation to you. If only sister or even cousin. For a name is all a woman has in the world, for better or worse. And while it is true that I lived with the dragon, it was only as his ward. Now that he's slain, I am truly alone and most vulnerable.
Of course you are, my dear. And although I do not wish to appear unknightly, still you must realize I am a poor man.
Oh, it needn't be a real wedding with the bells all ringing and the choir boys singing. Actually, you have to have a cathedral for that, and the parents of the bride, and I don't know where there's a cathedral, and I'm not at all sure where my parents are. But wherever they are, they'd be a lot happier thinking we were married, or at least engaged.
Yes. Well, I suppose we could go through some simple sort of ceremony, though it would scarcely be binding in the hereafter.
I will take my chances with the hereafter, just so long as I need not be ashamed of my title in the here.
Alizan would have been content to settle down in the cave which for so long had been our home. But Sir Henry felt otherwise. So they set out the next morning in search of a proper place to live, Alizan seated behind Sir Henry on Ponderer's broad back, her arms firmly clasped around her fiancé's middle. It was indeed, being early summer, a time for lovers. The birds sang, the woods smelled sweet, the meadows were gay with butterflies.
My love, I shall be sore tonight from sitting so long upon a horse.
I've been thinking of that. Perhaps I can find a wheelwright to make you a little chaise which can be attached in some manner to my charger's rear and in which you can sit and take your ease.
I should like the interior to be lined with cherry-colored silk with tassels of gold and a place for my brushes and my long-handled mirror.
Oh, I had not thought about a lining for it.
Oh, do not be impatient with me. I'm still very young.
I love your being young.
Yet you are somewhat grizzled with age.
That is why I wear your youth like a favor.
Oh, that is rather sweet. When do you think we will be married?
Well, I'm not quite sure.
So they continued their journey, Alizan quite content, and Sir Henry somewhat confused at suddenly acquiring an unexpected and unasked-for fiancée. In the late afternoon, as they came out of the woods into a green meadow, they saw a strange knight approaching from the opposite direction, also with a lady riding at his back. At once the stranger reined in his charger.
Whoever you are, stand and declare yourself. I'm Henry of Brentwood, and this is my lady Alizan.
Travelling whence? Bound whither?
Though I cannot see how it is any of your business, I don't mind telling you that we have lately left a dragon's lair by Indlewater and are on our way to find a house. So if you'll be so kind as to step aside and let us pass.
Not in a thousand years.
Why not?
I have made a vow to let no one pass me.
That's a pretty silly vow. You must have to fight everyone you meet.
I do.
Do you enjoy it?
It's a living.
Oh, very well. I'm afraid you'll have to dismount, dear.
You're not going to do battle with this ridiculous fellow.
But there's no help for it. He must keep his vow, so he must have at me, for which reason I must have at him, and so forth.
What happens if you lose?
Why, then he will have you as a prize, along with my armor and my horse and my dog.
And if you win, what then?
Then I shall have whatever is his.
And you will have his lady also?
Why, yes, I suppose so.
That could be very awkward.
I cannot very well help it. It's in the rules.
Oh.
The two knights approached each other at a smart canter. Sir Henry's spear centered on his foe's shield. The stranger aimed at Sir Henry's visor, which was generally conceded to be a better target and showed superior technique. They were just about to close when Alizan exploded.
The Mandarin!
Sir Henry, turning to look at her, threw both himself and his foe off their aim. And both spears missing their target, the two knights were carried harmlessly past each other to the opposite ends of the meadow. There, Sir Henry found himself beside the stranger's lady. A very attractive lady indeed, with wide green eyes and hair the color of twilight.
And what's your name, my dear?
Megan, Sir Knight.
You understand, if I win, you will have to go with me.
Where to?
Well, I'm not quite sure.
Oh, I'll go with you right willingly, if you're upon a quest.
Well, I suppose you might call it a quest.
Is it the Grail you seek?
No, not exactly. I had not thought to reach so far.
Oh, there is nothing like the Grail to move a man to heroic deeds.
Well, I really haven't any name for my quest yet.
Oh, I don't mind what it is, as long as it's for honor and renown. attend for the spirit's sake.
We'll talk about it later at dinner. Right now, I have to get back to work.
This time, each spear found its target, and each knight landed on the grass, unhorsed. Sir Henry's helmet fell off, and the battle continued on foot, but Sir Henry's disadvantage worked in his favor. Being unhelmed, he could see the blows coming in thunder, while his adversary was all but deafened by the clanging inside his helmet, as Sir Henry clouted him again and again. Round and round they went in the hot afternoon sun, and as the minutes went by, the action became slower and slower. Finally, the stranger stopped and put the point of his sword to the ground.
It's hot in here. What do you say we take fire?
Oh, an excellent idea. Alison, my dear, would you fetch the stoup of wine?
Oh, I have some bread and cheese.
This is all capital. It must be nearly tea time anyway.
And so the two warriors sat down together under a tree while their ladies waited on them and all in very agreeable company together.
Oh, it's too bad we cannot join forces and go on together. It would be pleasant for the ladies to have someone to talk to, and you and I could practice feats of arms and keep each other company in the evenings.
I could not agree with you more. Why don't you turn back and ride with us in the direction in which we are going?
I've just come from there. Why don't you go my way with me?
Oh, that is impossible, because I'm going in the opposite direction.
Well, then, there's no help for it. We must fight it out.
Oh, it seems almost too bad.
Yes. Let's get it over with.
Yes, I suppose we'd better.
Henry, my love.
Yes, my dear.
May I have a word with you?
Yes, of course.
Excuse me a moment. Go right ahead. Henry, I've got an idea. When you begin the fight,
oh, but that would be unfair.
It's fair in love and war. What if you had your head hacked off?
Well,
a woman should help her husband all she can.
I wonder if I might ask a favor of you, old boy.
Of course.
Yeah, I noticed when you fought without your helmet, it seemed to give you rather an advantage in mobility and so forth.
Quite so.
Would you mind if I did the same?
Not at all.
Thank you.
As the two knights stepped into the clearing and faced each other again, Alizan suddenly turned on Megan and clouted her across the ears with such force that she landed flat on her back in the grass. But Megan was instantly back on her feet and aimed a haymaker to Alice's jaw that brought her to her knees.
Oh, well done! A shrewd blow!
A moment later, the Lady Megan was again stretched out on the turf.
Oh, I say now.
So great was the stranger's concern with the lady's battle that he did not see Sir Henry raise his sword and bring it down on his head with a great clout that fair split it open. The stranger knight was dying, his broken head cradled in Megan's lap. He looked up at Sir Henry, and his reproachful eyes reminded the champion of a certain late dragon.
That was most unfair of you.
It was your idea to remove your helmet.
At any rate, it's too late to quibble. I leave you the problem of living, and also, as is the custom, my horse, feather bed or comforter, my armor, and my lady. Her name is Megan.
Yes, I know.
She is not at all what you might expect. Her father was preceptor of Dorchester, and she is widely traveled. At 16, she ran away with a clerk who was then at work on the little commentary and left him because he failed to move up to the greater commentary. She is ambitious. She had great hopes for me. She will make a hero of you if she can.
I have other plans for my husband.
Oh. Then I am sorry for you.
And quietly the strange knight died. Sir Henry was somewhat moved by this. His eyes became moist, his throat dry, his nose stuffed.
I have the nosebleed.
The three travelers then prepared to spend the night in the shelter of a large tree in a meadow filled with fireflies.
I am sorry I was obliged to box your ears, Lady Megan, but if I had not made a diversion, Sir Henry might have been slain.
Oh, that's quite all right. After all, I wasn't married to him, and for that matter, I wasn't even much taken with him. As long as your quest is in search of honor and glory, and for the spirit's sake, I'm well satisfied to go with you.
Our quest is for a small castle with a moat, for a small fortune and the enjoyment of it.
Oh, that's not very spiritual. I would not wish to be the wife of a fife-holder.
King Arthur was a fife-holder, and no one asked you to be anybody's wife.
King Arthur was not as great a hero as Sir Percival, who sought the Grail.
And what did he find for his pain? Broken bones and headaches and very probably a nosebleed.
I was only thinking of what was best for you.
Oh, is there anything better for a man than a home?
Of course. A high heart and a quest worthy of it.
Oh, the world is shrinking. There are fewer dragons and more people. A decent quest is hard to find these days. Oh, tell me, Megan, where may I find the high heart to take me across the world?
Why, you need only look within your ribs for it, a little below the collarbone.
Emptiness is there. An emptiness better filled with hot and tasty food than vain dreams. And coldness that only a man's own heart can warm, and loneliness that only a man's wife can banish.
Yeah, and sleepiness. Why don't you two knock it off? I've had a very hard day.
And the ladies, each dutiful for her own reason, fell silent. And soon there was no sound beneath the tree but the unrhythmical, triangular breathing of sleep. Out in the meadow, Sir Henry's horse, Ponderer, grazed in the moonlight and indulged himself in agreeable conversation with the charger of the late lamented.
I don't believe I caught your name.
Simpkins. It's Simpkins, Mr. Ponderer.
Well, I hope you'll be very happy with us, Simpkins.
Happy? What is happy about being a horse? One works, one eats, sometimes. One sleeps when and where one can.
True. There are problems, but simple ones. For instance, we needn't waste time trying to save humanity, because humanity doesn't want to be saved at all. Do you believe in the hereafter?
Me? I'm a horse.
My master thinks there is a heaven to which, when he dies, he'll be transported in good state to the accompaniment of gentle music.
With both ladies?
Certainly. It's obvious he'd be in hell if he were obliged to choose between them.
Romance is produced and transcribed by William Frug. You have heard part one of Sir Henry by Robert Nathan, specially adapted for radio by William N. Robeson, starring Jay Novello as Sir Henry, with Mr. Nathan as our narrator. Ellen Morgan appeared as Alisane and Betty Harford as Megan. Featured in the cast were Edgar Berrier, Pinto Colvig, Paul Frees, Thurl Ravenscroft, June Foray, and Jack Moyles. Special music composed and conducted by Jerry Goldsmith. This is Dan Coverley, inviting you to listen next week when Mr. Robert Nathan returns to narrate part two of Sir Henry on Romance. A top entertainment show that's moved into our Saturday night roster is Peter Potter's Jukebox Jury. His Honor Pete presides with a heavy gavel over a cast of visiting show business stars, and the Jukebox Jury picks the hits from the misses. Enjoy the fun. Enjoy CBS Radio's Jukebox Jury, now Saturday nights. Stay tuned now for Gunsmoke, which follows immediately over most of these same stations.